We are very happy with the next speaker, Catherine Austin Fitz. She was here last year, and she is one of the persons that understands and can explain what's happening in the financial world and what we can expect. Catherine studied at Wharton School of Economics, worked as an investment banker, and in the US government, did some impressive studies, how a lot of money disappeared, how it was done, and she has some practical suggestions like cash on Friday. Fridays just spent cash. What is necessary is a counter-revolution.
Thank you. So I see many wonderful friends in the audience, and I have to start off with thank yous. Jan, first of all, thank you for this wonderful conference, because last year was so great we said we've got to come back. So round of applause for Jan. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to live in this beautiful country and one that has so much wonderful new media. So one of the people who first plugged me in was Sander. So a round of applause, Sander, for you and for Andercon. I've been studying with Professor von Wolfram. And it's an amazing experience, and you can see a lot of it on YouTube. But I also want to thank him as well for a wonderful speech today. Another round of applause. Where are you? Where are you, Carl? He's in the back. Okay. And finally, I have to thank my partner, Robert Dupper, from Soleri Europa, who made it possible for me to start a company here and live in the Netherlands. So, Robert, he's on the... Okay, so with that, I want us to go into the invention room. I just want you to use your imagination. And let's pretend you live in a big house, and next to you, you have a neighbor. And your neighbor also lives in a big house next to you. You both have a house, you both have a car, you both have a family. So one day we say, okay, we're going to change the rules. You have to earn your money, but your neighbor can just print their money off of their computer. And when you want to finance your house, you have to take out a mortgage at 2, 3, 4, 5%. But your neighbor can take out a mortgage at 0.001%. Okay? And let's say you break a rule. You speed in the car, you drink while you're driving. You get fined or you have to go to prison. But when your neighbor does it, they don't have to go to prison. They don't have to get fined. Now let's go forward for another 50 years. How wealthy is your neighbor going to be and how wealthy are you going to be? Okay? So this is very simple. And what I want to do today is look behind the walls of secrecy at some of the privileges that we're dealing with, because behind our sovereign governments, 190 plus sovereign governments around the world, there is a power that is not playing by the same rules we are. And we are recognizing their privileges, we're affording their privileges, and this is something we need to deal with. So I want to talk a little bit about the secret sauce behind central banks, the use of sovereign immunities, and secrecy to engineer a global coup. Since the mid-90s, we've been in a serious financial coup around the world, and we're all feeling the pain of it. So let's just dive in. Everybody know who I mean by the Bank of International Settlements? Okay, the Bank of International Settlements is the central bank of the central banks, and we're going to talk a little bit about who they are and what they do. First, I want to give you a sense of where they're going with their sovereign immunities and powers of secrecy and other things. To play the video I just punched, okay, 56 seconds. Best explanation I've ever seen of what's coming or what they're going to try and do. But here's the other thing. This 56 seconds is something I swore I would never see in my life, and that is a central banker being honest. This is a miraculous experience. 56 seconds. Here we go.
Our analysis on CBDC, in particular for the use of general, to the general use, we tend to establish the equivalence with cash. And there is a huge difference there. For example, in cash, we don't know, for example, who is using a $100 bill today. We don't know who is using a 1,000 peso bill today. A key difference with the CBDC is that central bank will have absolute control on the rules and regulations that will determine the use of that expression of central bank liability. And also, we will have the technology to enforce that. Those two issues are extremely important, and that makes a huge difference with respect to what cash is.
Okay, so that was Augustine Karstens, the general manager of the Bank of International Settlements in Geneva, Switzerland. And what he said is, with digital currencies, they will have the ability to set the rules and to enforce those rules centrally, which means if they don't want your money working more than 5 miles from your home, it won't work more than 5 miles from your home. It means if they decide to raise the taxes, they just take it from your account. Okay, so they set the rules, they see everything, and they can enforce centrally. Now, I'm going to show another video. This is Richard Werner, arguably the top academic scholar in the world on central banking, in Malmo, Sweden, this May, describing his conversation with a European central banker. It's about 2.5 minutes. Let's dive in.
It's possible that even if you have to have CBDC in some form, that you're not destroying the banking system. If you do it the way China is doing it, now you have to remember China only recently introduced their banking system, and it seems they were not willing to already give it up. They have already CBDC. It's still a pilot project, but it's introduced, you know, among millions of people already. But it was introduced on purpose in such a way that it would not harm the banking system, and therefore is a more truthful sort of update of the old paper money. But of course, it still has the control aspect. So at least it's not killing the banking system. The way they do this is by requiring you to have a bank account in order to get CBDC. So it's not a direct account at the central bank. It's only through your bank that you can get it. You see how simple that is, and of course, could be done over here, but they're not discussing it. Say, the ECB is not discussing it because you see their agenda is to get rid of banks. But this alternative exists. But then, of course, the key problem is this control aspect, which at the moment they haven't stepped up in China, but that can be introduced any time. And that, of course, is a concern. Also, they never talk about the nature of this CBDC. What is it actually going to look like? They never talk about that. Right. But I heard one European central banker tell me what it's going to look like. He saw it. He was invited to one of the old central banks in Europe that are very much promoting this, and they showed him. And you know, he's a top executive director of another central bank in Europe, and there's no reason to believe that he was telling me a story. And it was around this large and would be implanted under your skin. So that is the plan.
Right.
And of course that has other implications on top of what we've mentioned, on top of the control aspects, because that actually enters your body. In my view, violates human dignity, and can be then used for even in terms of functionality beyond the monetary and economic transaction purposes. So highly dangerous, and definitely something we have to oppose. And so using cash is one of the things we can do to make sure that it will be, the hurdle will be higher for the central planners to introduce the CBDC.
Lest you think that that's something far, far away, I just got an email from a subscriber in Australia who sent a video that included a review of a mailing that one of the large financial institutions in Australia had just sent to one of their customers, suggesting that they consider putting a chip in their hand in Australia, in a Commonwealth country. That's extraordinary. Okay, so let's go back to the BIS. Who is the BIS? The BIS has, let me go through key facts and figures. The BIS has sovereign immunity, and I'm going to talk a little bit about how that sovereign immunity has evolved over the years and is now being used in extraordinary ways. It is governed by a self-perpetuating board. It has a group of shareholders who are its members, 63 monetary authorities and central banks around the world. So not every central bank is a member and shareholder of the BIS. It's still predominantly the Western world. Russia just got put on probation as a result of what's going on with the sanctions. So we have a self-perpetuating board, and now its powers are being extended by what's called innovation hubs that they're placing around the world, which are negotiating treaties that give them sovereign immunity in these different places to help auger in and bring in the CBDC. Under the equivalent of their charter, what they can do is they can transact gold, they can maintain deposits, securities account data, and financial assets for their 63 members, as well as for, you ready for this? Other. Who's other? This is one of the unanswered questions in the global economy. But if you look at their balance sheet, they stipulate that they can create and maintain investment vehicles which are off balance sheet. So you have secret pots of money, and you have a global financial piping system that can go anywhere, do anything within that group of 63 members and other, completely behind secrecy. They have the right to encrypt and keep all of their data and documents secret. Okay. Their sovereign powers began in 1930 when they were created ostensibly to handle the reparations of the Germans to the Allies. And then they were extended by something called the Brussels Protocol, which was an amendment to the Hague Convention. And then there's been a series of agreements that have extended this. These slides are up at Saleri.com, so I'm not going to go through the details of the history. You can find it all there, as well as some other information. But several things have happened recently. In 1994, the Federal Reserve bought shares in the BIS. They had declined to do it on the contention that there were potential conflicts of interest. But they purchased the shares in 1994 and became much more actively involved in the BIS. And this was a fusion that I think has been one of the critical partnerships behind the financial coup that started several years later. But then a second thing happened, and that is they created a financial stability board and made it a separate Swiss association, which is co-located at the BIS, and I believe have extended those sovereign immunities to a wide network of what they call systemically important banks, systemically important financial institutions, and systemically important payment systems. And then following that, they've created the innovation hubs, and they're negotiating treaties and contracts with government around the world that yet again extend those sovereign immunities into those in innovation hubs that are designed to bring in CBDC. Okay, so if you drill down and you look at the different sovereign immunities that they enjoy, they're quite extraordinary. And I would just mention, to give you a sense of how extraordinary they are, one of the pronounced exceptions, which is traffic accidents. If a member of the BIS, their guests or expert, have a traffic accident, they are subject potentially to civil action and civil money penalties. But that is literally about it. So they have the ability to enter into a wide variety of transactions globally and not be subject to the local jurisdiction. So, for example, I'm jumping ahead, but we've all seen the different pharmaceutical companies making secret deals with government, and every effort in court to get the secret deal we can't get. Why is it? Because it's happening behind sovereign immunity. That's why. And again, these slides are up on the Saleri report, so I'm not going to go through all of them, but they are able progressively to transfer these, not only enjoy these sovereign immunities, but transfer them to other people engage in transactions both laundering through the system or maintaining investments on assets under management, which are secret. I mean, literally, through this mechanism, you could buy the whole planet and own it in secret. And literally, I go back to the two neighbors. You know, one neighbor is free to print money, and the other neighbor has to earn it. And over many, many years, they end up owning everything. Okay. There was a breakthrough during the financial crisis because there were a series of banks who were clearly caught engaging in criminal activity. And the Department of Justice did not prosecute them and did not prosecute any of the officers. And every week on the Salieri Report, we do something called Money and Markets, and my co-host is John Titus. And John Titus is a very ferocious litigator. He's an attorney. And he drilled down into one of the prosecutions or one of the sort of negotiations between the Department of Justice, in this case, HSBC, one of the large British banks, but also a bank on the systemically important banking list of the BIS. And what he discovered, if you follow the trail, is it appears they are being extended the same sovereign immunity that the BIS has and is able to offer to its guests. And there's a very thin line where if you do financial transactions through the BIS, they can cover those transactions with their sovereign immunity, even if you're putting in the money one place, it's coming out in the other place. But while it's traveling from here to there, it's behind a wall of secrecy. Anyway, so I would recommend this to you. It's up on Best Evidence, which is John's YouTube channel. It's called All the Plenary's Men. And he walks through the detail and makes the case, I would argue, that the sovereign immunities of the BIS are now being extended globally through the very big banks. Now, what do I mean by very big banks? I'm talking about a cartel that wants to put a chip in our hands that will give them complete central control. Okay. This is a list, and you can find it at the Salieri Report, of the financially systemic banks on the right, the systemically important insurance companies. They have never, that I know of, provided a list of the systemically important payment systems. Okay, but as you can see, there are plenty of European institutions on both of those lists. Okay, this is a map that shows you the innovation hubs. There is a strategic partner between the BIS and the Fed in New York. That's a very critical relationship for bringing in this system. The other locations are the innovation hubs, and those, again, are designed to help bring in the CBDC and coordinate globally. Okay. So here we have a central banking system with extraordinary powers that are able to completely override the powers of 190 sovereign governments of the kind of pattern that we've been seeing during the pandemic. But their actions dovetail with another group of sovereign immunities that you can see on the right. The United Nations also enjoys extraordinary sovereign immunities, and so do their development banks, the World Bank and the IMF. Now, why do I bring up the World Bank and the IMF? Because part of the game that we're dealing with, part of the financial coup, is putting governments in a debt trap. Because as the debt of our different governments go up, they lose the flexibility of saying no to the central banking cartel. And as we get into a debt trap, we get into a situation where the central bankers centrally can dictate terms to the different governments, as we've seen during COVID-19. And so one of the issues that we're going to have to battle out in Europe and in the United States is this cartel has, in my opinion, legally overreached their powers. And real transparency needs to be brought to the question of sovereign immunity. And a real question needs to be asked, is some of the jurisdictions that have given the sovereign immunity, is it time to withdraw? So one of the things that's going on, because the WHO is trying to negotiate greater powers to declare a global pandemic, one of the big campaigns that's going on is exit the WHO. So, I would say exit the whole kit and caboodle, exit the United Nations, and stop let taxpayers' money fund all of this. This is a quote from Ian Fleming, who wrote Goldfinger. I keep bringing up Goldfinger because, you know, the guy who runs the WF keeps reminding me of Ernst Blofeld from Goldfinger. But so Ian Fleming wrote Goldfinger, and he says, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action. Now, I bring that up because if you drill down and you watch how the debt entrapment games works, what you know is it's a criminal game. So, for example, if I wanted to make $1 trillion this year, how could I do it? How could I do it? Well, how about if I just pull energy from Europe, let the economy crash? Do you know how many businesses and market share in real estate I can pick up cheap? Governments run the debt up some more. I just got them in a bigger trap. Okay? And it's hard for people to fathom criminality on that scale. But I worked at Wall Street in Washington, and so it's easier for me. I lived with it. Okay. So, what do we do? If you want to know more, you can get these slides at Solari.com. They're open to the public. The program's there. Some great suggested reading if you want to understand more about the Bank of International Settlements and the global sort of central banking cartel. Patrick Wood has done a lot of writing on his website at Technocracy News. Great website. I recommend it. Best evidence, as I said, is John Titus's YouTube channel. He's got a great video called All the Plenary's Men. And you can really see it's a case study in how one bank skates from enormous criminality. And you really see how the game works. Wonderful book published in 2015 by a British journalist, The Tower of Basel. You know, we were always trained to believe that the BIS was a policy shop, and this book does a wonderful job of showing you what you're looking at is the premier money laundering network in the world. For many years, I've been chasing $21 trillion that disappeared from the U.S. government. One of the big financial questions is, how can you possibly launder that much money? It's too much to just launder through pizza restaurants. So, you know, where are the global pipes that can handle it? And that investment in the BIS by the Federal Reserve in 1994 and the subsequent disappearance of the $21 trillion inspired me recently to write an article that you can find up on the website as well called Does the BIS Owe Us $21 Trillion? And I will bet you a dollar that they do. And finally, the BIS website does a relatively good job of describing their organization and their powers and their charters. They don't describe it, how it can be teamed up with the UN and the development banks and used to sort of engineer this game. Okay, so that's suggested reading. What about suggested action? Jan mentioned, use cash. Let's roll it back the other way. The more we take the system analog, the harder it becomes to implement the CBDCs and the digital currency. We started with Cash Friday and it became so popular, we're calling it Cash Every Day now. And we have a cartoon every week on Solari, and this is a woman going through the checkout, and the checkout lady says, how would you like to pay, cash or slavery? So when everybody says, cash is inconvenient, I show them that. Finally, we did a major piece. John Titus wrote a major piece about sovereignty because we don't have a financial problem. We don't have an economic problem. We have a question of whether we individually and our nations are going to be sovereign or it's all going to be stolen by people who have privileges above sovereign accountability. That's what this battle is about. And to help people understand the interaction between the law, which is, you know, the rule of law, which is what is most important, and the central banking game, we published a big write-up that John did called Sovereignty. We brought many copies here today. They're complimentary and free. If you're interested in diving more into this topic, I would suggest they're going to be at the desk downstairs. So if you want a copy of our annual wrap-up, please avail yourself of that. It's a wonderful description of what I believe is the core issue before us, which is how do we maintain our individual sovereignty, and collectively, how do we help our nations maintain their sovereignty and literally take them back? Every country in this in the world right now is in the clutches of the central bankers, so we've got to take it back. I just want to remind you, there are members of the Soleri team around here who can help and answer your questions. If we run out of copies, we'll get you more. I want to introduce Ricardo Oskam here. And Su Ling, where are you? Su Ling, there. And Yaron is helping Robert here. And I think that's... Who else we got, Robert? And we got Yuris there. Okay. Just let us know how we can help. As you might notice, the cover of our annual wrap-up is a picture of our Soleri Hero of the Year. Every week we have a hero, because we think there are millions of wonderful people out there doing incredible things, and we need to support and help them. We try and do a lot of that at Soleri. But every year we make a Hero of the Year, and our Hero of the Year is Wim Hof. We all love Wim Hof at Soleri. And I just want to quote, there's a quote on the wrap-up from Wim Hof, which is at the head of his website, if you've ever been, and I just want to mention it to you, because it's the message: when you look at overwhelming powers like this that have operated in secrecy, it can feel overwhelming. But the reality is, if we bring it to light and start to deal with it, it can be dealt with. And as you can see where they're going, we might as well do whatever we have to do to deal with it, because we're not going to go where they want to go. So let me remind you the quote from Wim Hof. It's up on the cover. You are stronger than you think you are. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Very good speech. Thank you.